Welcome, listeners, to another amazing, fantastic bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And today, get ready for this one, we have a special guest with us, someone who also has a podcast about books. Is everybody's mind still together here? Anyways, I'd like to welcome, and everyone please help me welcome, Matt from There Will Be Books Podcast. Matt, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure, and I'm very excited about this because I feel like I'm swimming to the top of the podcast pool to communicate with other people in my in the fellowship.
yeah, in the club.
Yeah, and so here we go. So let's just go into it. Why did you start a podcast about books? Short or long answer?
Me and my co-host Peter have always kind of been into books. We've been friends for a bit. Over a decade, we always kind of talked to each other about books. Kind of a year or so ago, I was like, you know, we should maybe start a podcast to have an outlet to talk about the books we read rather than just kind of talking at our significant others about what we read and having their eyes glaze over. Maybe we could actually, you know, discuss the books and have kind of a creative outlet for all the energies. So, seemed like a good move, and it's actually, I'm finding it pretty fun.
Oh, that's good. There wasn't a part of you that was like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast and it's just going to be just lost in the middle of nowhere, or was it just, who cares who's listening or not listening? Let's just record our book conversations.
We want to kind of read what we want to read, talk about what we want to talk about, but also kind of encourage some listener input, and we're trying to be more interactive with the what we read and take suggestions and stuff. So it's kind of, you know, navigating both sides. It's not a do what we want to do type of thing. It's just kind of fun to do, kind of however it goes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, that's also part of the podcasting, is that when you're doing your own thing and you're not necessarily signed on with a particular company or it's not a specific job, then you can go whichever way seems to fit, which can be malleable.
Yeah, it's be yourself and kind of see what works, you know?
Yeah, that's fun. So are either of you by trade, are either of you involved in either writing or publishing or anything like that? Or this is kind of your side thing that we love books so much and want to speak about it?
Yeah, not professionally, no. Just always kind of been a pretty serious hobby. I think we both kind of like scribble, kind of write some things, but, you know, not professionally or anything.
Do you want to do that professionally, or this is just, or this is no separate?
No, I don't know. I never say never, but I don't know if I'll ever write anything professionally.
Yeah, that's true. That's part of just going with the flow of things, of like seeing what happens. Like, if it ever happens, then great. And if not, that's also great.
Yeah. But like, yeah, just like some essays and like journaling in the morning and stuff like that, but nothing serious.
Right. And like, are you thinking, as you're doing your podcast in each of these episodes, is it more, hey, let's get a conversation going around these books that we've been reading and talking about, or I hope I could get someone also to read this book that I loved so much? Do you have any specific goal like that, or what?
Oh, it kind of depends. Sometimes we'll both read the same book, and, you know, once or twice a month, we'll have an episode devoted just to that book.
Right.
And those are fun to do, at least according to, like, our, you know, internal metrics. They seem to do pretty well. And then every week we just kind of have a more free-flowing conversation, kind of about what we're reading, what we want to read. You know, if we go to a bookstore and get a book haul, we'll just kind of talk about the books we bought that we don't have time to read, but we couldn't resist buying anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a specific, kind of geared towards the type of people who like that sort of thing.
Right. It's like a reading life, almost, yeah.
Yeah. Book nerds, serious readers, you know, people who kind of compulsively buy books and can't help themselves.
Yeah. At any given day, I know this is just going to be like a number out in the wind, But how many unread books that, oh, I'm going to read those, would you say you've got sitting around? Not just the ones in your mind, but the ones that you've actually bought.
Oh, man. Like, what, just in, like, the last year, or?
I don't know. Just thinking, like, right now, I have X amount of books sitting there that I think I'm going to read. That are, you know.
Oh, I mean, sitting on my bedside table, I have a, like, pile of, like, I will read these soon.
Right.
I'm meaning to. And that's, there's probably about 7 books there.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and those aren't the ones I'm actually, I have 3 different ones I'm actually reading, and they're in separate places. So it's pretty unrealistic.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, you just kind of keep going and keep going, and you get some stuff read.
Yeah, I once saw an article that, and I don't remember where it was, but it was a person's bookshelf is not just the books they've read, but also the books they're aspiring to read. So even if they haven't read it, it's just showing you like what their life goals are, kind of where.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I would say it's more ambition, you know, than accomplishment. Yeah.
Yeah. There's way more books than there's time to read them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I finally redid my shelves to single out the ones that I actually haven't read yet. And I'm like, that's a little bit more than I thought. And all of a sudden I'm still buying books, even though I still have like 3 shelves worth of unread books. It's not going to stop me.
Yeah. Well, how do you do your shelves? Is it by subject, alphabetical?
Oh, you're turning the question around, turning the interview around.
Yeah.
Well, right now, you know, I always see photos of people who have their books done by color, and those always look amazing. But then I think I don't want to separate a series, so why would I do that? I finally redid everything by size and series, so they don't necessarily make sense, because I don't really have by genre or by author. Sometimes it's like, well, the big books have to go here, but this one's part of a series, so it has to go here. But I do have a rough plan, I guess, for it. It's mainly, I start off with putting series in one place. And then the books that I like are the ones that go more in front. The books that I half like going back. That's kind of how I have my books done. The bigger question is, where do you keep all your books? Do you keep all your books, or do you give them away after you've read them? Or some and some?
I'm trying to get better at kind of loosening them up and giving some away. But for a long time there, I hung on to every single one. Because in the back of your head, it's always like, oh, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I might need this random thriller from the 70s or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been good about kind of donating some or taking them to used bookstores and at least getting some store credit.
Yeah.
But I am kind of a hoarder that way. I do kind of err still on the side of just hang on to them, because you never know.
Yeah. I like having a library of books. I try to lend them out to some people, but it's usually the same 10 or 15 books that get lent out. So then there's the other few hundred, you know, that aren't touched. I like looking in my room and seeing a library of books there. I just do. I don't have space for it. And I'm running out. I keep running out of space.
Yeah, no, there's something comforting about it.
Kind of scrolling through between your Instagram feed and the past episodes that you've done, it seems like you tend toward, well, you and Peter tend more toward classics or toward whatever's out now books. Even though every once in a while I see that you throw the other stuff in. Like, is it because, yes, we do read more classics, or we figured we'd stick with that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and we're trying to maintain a balance. We did just do Dubliners in November. We're doing I, Claudius this month. And then we throw some new stuff in there. It kind of works out. It's kind of like, for now, it's whatever we want to read.
Right.
We kind of, every month, each of us will bring 3 books to the table, and we kind of nominate them to be the book of the month. And then, you know, we'll talk about them, debate it, and then settle on one. Yeah, and you're right, they do kind of wind up being some older ones. We just read Piranesi, new one by Susanna Clark. That was actually really good. But that's kind of how it just pans out, you know. It's been interesting to, because normally I kind of wander all over the place and have half-finished books and, you know, grab stuff and be like, oh, that looks interesting, and then, you know, get distracted by other stuff. And I still kind of do that, but knowing that, you know, in a week or two, I have to talk about this for at least an hour with somebody else, it kind of helps me focus a bit. You know, I can say, well, I'm going to finish, you know, the James Joyce or whatever because I have to. So it's actually been good in that respect as far as my own personal discipline goes.
Just forcing you to finish reading the book, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You don't necessarily choose books that you've both read. Each of you could bring whatever books you're reading for the episode.
Yeah, yeah. We'll pick new ones to read every month. And then we each have kind of our own side projects or stuff we want to read. And we can come and just kind of talk about those. Talk about whether or not the other would be interested in them or give kind of a summary to the audience or a recommendation for the audience. And, we got a Patreon that we just started, and we're thinking that might help with some of the audience participation. You know, subscribers, we get kind of votes on what to read, and that might kind of broaden the scope.
Yeah, it's nothing like getting book recommendations. Like, that's every reader's dream. Is I was like, oh, what? Okay, I'll just add it to the ever-growing list of books I want to read and may or may not ever get to.
Yeah, it's like, well, let's see if I can get to it. But, you know, but it's good to have to, like, pick and then there's like two or three a month that you're going to read. And there's, you know, and it works out because I probably wouldn't have picked up Dubliners on my own.
Right.
But Peter wanted to read it, and that wound up being the November book, and I actually really liked it. Like, Joyce is always pretty intimidating in my mind, but, you know, kind of having to, for the sake of the show, wound up being good. And that's nice. That's kind of a pleasant perk of having this as a project.
Yeah, for sure. So for someone like Joyce or anyone else who's considered more of like, you know, classics or anything like that, do you do any research before or after you've read the book to see how do people interpret this, or do you ever read the book and like, I know I'm supposed to get something here, but I didn't exactly get something here, you know, then you have to go online to start figuring it out?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I purposely stay away from other people's interpretations before I read it.
Right, okay.
I want my own perspective. And I've actually kind of found if you go in looking for stuff, you'll find something.
Okay.
You know, there's been a couple books I wondered, like, can I talk about this for, can we do this for an hour, hour and a half? And there's always something. And then if I'm curious about, like we did The Hobbit for December, we actually just recorded that episode. And I read it on my own, and then I went to YouTube and researched some Norse mythology and kind of added that to the show notes after the fact.
Right.
But I do like to have my own take first. I kind of don't want anybody else's interpretation kind of interfering it while I'm reading.
Right.
And then all the context and the historical stuff and whatever I'll do after, before we record.
Has any of that ever either helped broaden your opinion of the book, or were you like, wow, I totally did not get that?
Honestly, you know what was weird with The Hobbit? I had read that. It's one of the first real adult books I read when I was really young, and I've read it a handful of times since. And so I circled back and read it again for the show, and I actually did kind of, researching kind of the Norse mythology and like Tolkien's life and letters and what he intended while he was writing that, there was a bunch of new stuff I found, which I wasn't expecting to find that much new stuff.
Right.
Because I read it so much and been so familiar with it. But there's a lot. Like that character, I don't know, have you read it?
No. It's one of those books that, yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay, yeah, no, and it's really good. And there's a character in there who's kind of modeled off Beowulf.
Oh, okay.
And I had I didn't put that together until, you know, like a week ago. It kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, that's cool. I had no idea. So, yeah, stuff like that will happen.
Did you watch the film that they made about him that was sort of like a biopic, but also not, but kind of really sort of was?
No, that's on my list, though. Yeah, it was Tolkien as a young man.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw that. I actually think I watched it on the plane, which probably wasn't the best place to see that because of the way they try to intertwine the world, so you kind of need a bigger screen for it to be able to get the full CGI effect.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, but the opportunity presented itself, so I took it.
Would you, having seen it on a plane, would you recommend it, or?
I think I enjoyed it. I didn't fully appreciate it just because I'm not as familiar with his writing, but I'm more familiar with him as just as a figure. But I'm curious about people who've read his work, if they see that and they see what they, you know, they could fully appreciate what they did with that. I don't know how much I love, like, they're showing him on the battlefields and they're kind of bringing in like his universes into that. You know, I don't know. World War One is, it's not really a place for fantasy, but I guess they kind of show that to show, because it's a dark world, right? That they're trying to bring, that they're trying to show. So I don't know.
Oh, I see. When he was in the trenches. And
yeah.
Maybe that kind of informed the orcs or the bleakness of.
Yeah.
Oh, I follow. Okay.
Right. So, like, I wonder how more avid fan would feel about that. I remember I enjoyed it. I wasn't particularly, you know, what they do or what they not do there, but a part of it is just being able to just watch the film and having no sort of fan investment in it. So, you know, for better or for worse. Yeah. I think especially if you've read his stuff, it would be something to see, just to see what they did with it, you know? Because that's always a curious thing to be able to see. Like, oh, I see where they went with this, you know? Or that was an interesting twist that they added there. Also, the way he developed his own language, which I know...
Yeah.
I'm not great with that. Like, I know also with Superman, you know, they do that with Superman or whatever, and then people are walking around speaking these made-up languages. So it's amazing for an author to do that, especially someone who has such an understanding of language and structure and things like that. It's incredible. But for me, I think it's a little bit ridiculous. We barely communicate as is. Why are we finding more languages to, like...
Oh, yeah, adding a fictional one.
Yeah. But then I guess, I guess any dialect could be a fictional dialect if people are all part of the same community and they're all speaking that language. Like, I'm not really sure how I feel about made-up languages and people speaking it with fluency. But I don't want to bash anybody for that, but it's kind of like, come on, can we all just try to find the same language to speak?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, what's the Star Trek one?
Klingon. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's another one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's on Duolingo. If you want to learn Klingon, that language learning app, it's available.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, I guess, I guess two people who don't speak the same language, if they do speak Klingon, they could communicate with each other, but it's like...
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know.
I'm all for it. If you're into it, I'm all for it, but I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't know if I have the time for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to master English. Like, I barely am mastering English. And I have,
I'm still working on my first language.
Yeah, and I've learned a little bit of other languages, but I'm like, come on. But I guess also, as an author, for me, English is, you know, the deeper you dive, the more you're going to find about it. And sometimes you see writers who have incredible vocabularies, and you're like, I didn't even know these words are out there. So,
Yeah,
that's always like a big thing. By the way, as a side thing, how did you guys come up with the name for your podcast? Was that just something out of thin air? You're like asking for a friend, how does this sound to you?
It was between the two of us. We were kind of going back and forth with names. And this one just kind of just stuck. One of us suggested it, and the other's like, I don't know, I guess it could work. Is that too silly? Is that okay? And we asked my wife, and he asked his girlfriend, and they're like, I like it. And so, here we are.
And then, do you say that in like an ominous voice, or is it more of like a fun, adventurous voice when you're saying there will be books?
it's not an ominous, threatening type of thing. It's just, there will be books.
So this also, I guess, kind of go back. Did you grow up as an avid reader? Is that something that was like a family thing, or like their parents pushed on you, or you came to reading later, or what's the deal with that?
Actually, I think all the credit for me being a reader goes to my mother, who was always reading to me from a young age. And then, I've always been kind of a book dork,
Yeah.
So, it's always from a young age. I read like The Hobbit and Narnia. Kind of went from there.
Right. Are you like, my children will be book people? Or you're just kind of like, well, we'll see how it goes.
I have a little baby, and we're already reading to him. Supposedly they respond well to your voice and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I hope he will. I'm not going to force him I don't want to turn him off to it, but you know, he'll grow up having his parents, you know, read to him, and then hopefully it takes. But you know, you don't want to turn the kid off by being too militant about it. So
yeah,
see how it plays out.
Yeah, well, people I've spoken to always say that it's modeling. So kids see their parents reading, they'll be more open to reading. Or I guess if
that's kind of how it seems. So
yeah,
yeah.
Well, also, this is like a totally random question, but having mentioned Narnia, how do you feel about like book to film adaptations?
I've only seen the first one, that newer one they did in the last decade or whatever.
Yeah,
that was okay. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly haven't seen the rest, and I remember. Do you remember they did a BBC adaptation like in the '80s?
Oh no.
Yeah, I remember really liking that as a kid. I don't know how it would hold up to an adult now, but that's the film version I remember. Kind of like, I think it aired on PBS, so that style of production.
Yeah, and especially whatever CGI was in the 80s, that doesn't usually hold up.
Yeah, no CGI. It was like, you know, a mannequin, big old mannequin lion, and stuffed big old, you know, adult-sized people in beaver outfits and all that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, not even for Narnia. When you hear that they're adapting a book to film, are you like, oh, I got to see that? Or you're just like, well, maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I won't. Who cares?
As an adult now, I'm like, maybe I'll get to it. It's not the same. Although, when the kid gets a couple of years older, I might circle back around and pay more attention to, kids' books adaptations. Scout them out, you know, to see if they're appropriate. Worthwhile.
Yeah. I have a friend that she only takes her nieces to see film adaptations if she's read the book first. So that's how she gets her to read. She's like, well, watch the film if you read the book first. Yeah.
You have to read. Oh, that's smart. Yeah. I like that. I'm actually kind of looking forward to kind of reading, getting back into like picture books and kind of the cool kids' classics and stuff when we're reading to the baby.
Yeah. There's a lot of great kids. There's so many good kids books and kids picture books, which were also never really on my radar for a long time. And even as an adult and as an author now, every once in a while I'll go back into it a little bit. And everyone thinks like, oh, I want to be a writer and write a picture book. Picture books are hard to get right. And so the ones that are right are just, they're incredible. They're so good.
Yeah. Do you, as an author, do you find them kind of useful?
They're very good for teaching you. Well, I'll say for teaching you. They're very good for showing how you can distill something very like a concept into very small amount of words. Which first of all, getting to the point is always a good thing. But the more you can condense a concept, and the more you can break it down, that's just a very good skill in general to have. And picture books, especially again the ones that are done right, even if they're taking an idea like friendship. But, you know, as an adult, you can pontificate about friendship or you talk about it. Or if you're writing for an older audience, you have pages and pages to write about it. But as a picture book author, you have to be able to just put it into a very few hundred words. And if you could get that core down, then especially as a writer who does have more space, if you could get the core down, now you're like, okay, I see where I'm going with this. Now I'll fill it in more. How did they break it down to get the idea across in so little words, and yet it still could be impactful? And also the ones that are delightful. There's so many that are just cute or clever that you just have an appreciation for what authors have done. So,
That's interesting. I guess that would be kind of useful, like a distillation of what you're looking for.
Yeah, I started my little collection of picture books now, so I'm sticking more to the genres that I'm writing. But every once in a while, I'll get one just because if it's that good enough or that worth having, it's a good thing to. I'm like thinking about Dr. Seuss. If anybody's ever read Dr. Seuss, especially, you know, all the places you'll go or something, that's brilliant. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Short and to the point, but gets his message across.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure that, like, books like The Little Prince, I don't even know, like, I know it's supposed to be a kid's book, but I don't know that it's a kid's book. Just because it's...
Yeah, it's kind of borderline. Like, it's good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, like, inappropriate for a kid, but I read it for the first time as an adult. I was like, oh, man, this is, like, some heavy, heavy stuff in here.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I guess those are also kind of exceptions, but if you could get that, or if you could find a way to get that, that's always going to be helpful for an author to, you know, anybody, any author gets it right is helpful for another author to read that. Like, oh, okay, oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Well, also, see, we're kind of zigzagging, but going back to, you know, the books that you're bringing to the table, the books that you're looking at, are these just books that you've heard about from other people that you're picking up, or books that are out there that you want to read, or do you have other ways of picking up recommendations, or you, you know, any sort of newsletter or whatever that you're signed up to, or you just go into a store, you browse, or how do you usually get your books lined up?
So far it's kind of been stuff we've been wanting to read, and mostly I think from our shelves. Sometimes there's some new ones thrown in, like, you know, stuff you've heard about, like, that'd be fun to read. But for the most part, I think it's just books that come from our shelves that, you know, we've been wanting to read for whatever reason. And I try to approach it like I'll pick my three that I want to recommend and make them to where, you know, I'd be happy if we chose any of the three.
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, a pleasant surprise. And Peter's got pretty good taste in books too. So, it, you know, we haven't read a bad one for the book club yet.
Oh, that's good. Has there been a classic that you've read that you're like, why is this a classic? This is terrible.
Oh, not yet. I'm trying to think. Like I say, I was pleasantly surprised by Dubliners.
Right. I saw Jane Eyre was on one of your things, and maybe it's just me, but creepy. Sorry, it's creepy.
Yeah, have you read it? Did you like it?
So the second... The whole thing with Jane Eyre, with Jane and Rochester, and that he's married and he's got the crazy wife upstairs and she's burning down the house, and somehow she magically hears him, you know, when they're apart after she leaves the house and he's almost going to marry. That, like, that whole situation is very weird to me.
Oh, really?
I don't feel like it holds, like, and I don't even know how it ever was written. Like, I guess you don't have a problem with it, but I'm like, this is weird.
Huh, yeah. Well, no, I haven't. That's been on my, like, I need to read this list for a long time. We actually almost picked it for January. Neither of us have read it.
Okay.
We really should get around to reading, you know, the Brontes. So,
yeah.
That's like an aspiration. Like, we'll probably read it eventually.
Okay. But I guess we'll see if that ends up falling in, if you're just like, wow, this is so good. And then I'll be like, what is wrong with these people? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I thought that way about Great Expectations a little bit ago.
Right.
And Miss Havisham is, like, super, super creepy.
Right. I haven't read that. I have a hard time with Dickens. I don't think I've ever finished... I don't think I've finished anything by Charles Dickens.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just... Everyone jokes about him being paid by the word, but it really gets too much for me. I don't...
Yeah, I haven't read some of the big ones.
Yeah.
Like, no, Bleak House. But Great Expectations, I was pleasantly surprised by.
Oh, okay.
It was, like, entertaining, you know? Like, Miss Havisham was really creepy.
Yeah.
An escaped convict. And it was all this exciting stuff happens. I wasn't expecting it to be quite so good, so.
Okay. Maybe I'll add it to the list. To the long list. Maybe they'll
Dickens
put it
can
in.
Be, yeah. Dickens can be pretty wordy, though.
Yeah. Is that one of the books, do you have certain books that you force yourself to read because if you're a book nerd, you have to have read this book, or you don't really...
Oh, yeah, that's probably why I picked it up.
Okay.
Great Expectations went for the podcast, it was a little before that.
Right.
But we call them on the podcast gaps in our reading.
Okay.
Like, stuff that you really should have read, but for whatever reason, you know, haven't. And you realize there's just so many of those.
Yeah.
There's so many books out there.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Jane Eyre's on there. I haven't read any Faulkner.
Right. Ever. Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's just so many gaps. So.
Yeah, well, like you said, there's so many, and especially whether or not you read, you're keeping up with what's coming out now, there's just always more. there's no end to it, which is great, but that also means there are certain times also, like, literary people who are sitting, you know, they're sipping their wine and they're talking about stuff. They're like, I don't know what they're saying. Like, I haven't read these books just because I haven't gotten to them yet. There's so many.
Yeah, you almost have to just embrace the randomness of it and, you know, try to pick good stuff.
Yeah.
Make what you read worthwhile, and
yeah, for sure.
You'll always be playing catch up, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, also because I'm reading so much for my market, and so I'm trying to keep keeping tabs on the market. So every once in a while, I'm reading a lot of the newer stuff. And then, but every once in a while, I'll try to force myself to read either outside of my market or, you know, American classic or something like that, just to break away from it and to make sure I check one box from the many boxes of, like, you should have read this. But that's not the usual reading list, because part of it is also so much of, you know, the market situation. Just keeping tabs on, that's like research. That's just like job stuff for a writer to...
Mm-hmm. You treat it like work.
Yeah, well, it is. It's part of the job.
Yeah.
So many writers, one of the first, they'll always say, like, oh, I was always an avid reader. I always read a lot. But you know, like anything, you got to know what your market's doing. So, well, you don't necessarily have to follow it, but you got to know what's what. I mean, that would be worse, I guess, if I would, oh, yeah, I write stuff and then I don't know. Like, oh, have you heard of X, Y, or Z? And, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Well, like, are you living in this universe or not, you know?
Huh. I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
We all do the best we can. By the way, random question also, another random question. How do you feel about graphic novels? You guys ever cover that stuff, or like graphic novels don't fit in here?
We haven't on the podcast yet, but I wouldn't be opposed to it. There are certain graphic novels that I've read and I really like, and I try not to be snobby about those. I'm actually looking at, I have... Volume 1 of the Sandman Omnibus by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, okay.
It's a really cool edition. So I like stuff like that.
That sometimes, especially if you got a good artist, is so great to see the combination.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of the times they can be really good. I mean, you know, all art's subjective and whatnot. But yeah, there are totally graphic novels that are worthwhile.
Yeah.
There are some that aren't, but, you know, there's some books that are kind of shallow, you know. So.
That's true. Do you see that you tend to gravitate towards certain books? Like, for some reason, I always end up with books with haunted houses. You know, well, whatever, you'd fill in the blank with that. Or do you have to force yourself to, like, expand?
Yeah, I guess I kind of like the historical adventure-y types.
Oh, yeah.
Or thriller mystery types. I do kind of notice, like, for our book club nominations, I tend to bring those to the table, and the ones of mine we've chosen have been like The Hobbit, or we did Flashman, I think in August, the historical adventure series. And then, yeah, like I say, Dubliners was Peter's, and he's more of he likes the classics and kind of the more serious literary stuff. And he'll bring a lot of those to the table. I think it's kind of a good mix, kind of force each other out of, you know, the other's comfort zones.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So maybe this question is more kind of for Peter, but is there something in classic literature that you don't see in modern literature that you wish would kind of make a comeback? Either stylistically or just types of stories? I don't know. Can you answer that one?
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing, especially in some of the stuff that gets taken seriously,
yeah.
You know, literary fiction or lit fic.
Yeah.
These days, I think that gets a little too navel-gazing, you know, a little too meta.
Yeah.
You know, college professors writing stories about the protagonists who are college professors who are kind of, like, sad.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to see, like, Dickens, you know, like him or not, he wrote about stuff other than his own life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He saw kind of the broader world and wrote about that.
Yeah.
So, and Joyce did that in Dubliners. It was more than just about himself. I'd like to see the serious literature should get back to, you know, seeing the broader world and not just about the author's inner psyche.
Yeah. That's why I always think twice about whenever you want to write a character that, oh, she loves books, or, oh, she loves to write. I mean, you can't never have a character. I guess you could never have a character like that, but I always feel like if I write a character like that, am I just writing myself in, which is a little bit in a too obvious kind of way. So I guess kind of like that also. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, and that's fine. You know, you got to draw from what you know. But, you know, like the kind of serious literary people, they only have one protagonist, and it's just kind of a mock of themselves, I think.
Yeah.
That can be a little tiring.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. Yeah. So I always wrap up with the fill in the blank of I love it when books, authors, publishers, series, you know, whatever you want to use there, do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. So how would you fill in the blank for that?
All right. So for what I really like, I'll admit to being a little shallow, and I will say that a good cover will grab me.
Yeah.
Regardless of the content, if it's like a cool looking anything. Painting of an old ship, a well-drawn castle in a forest, or, you know, a dashing guy with a sword. Whatever it is, I'll sucker for a good cover.
Amen. I totally agree with that. Especially because I know they say don't judge a book by its cover, but if it doesn't have a nice cover, I don't know that I'm going to pick it up. Sorry.
Well, as an author, how much input do you have over your covers?
So,
do you have any?
It depends what size company you're working with. So if you're in one of the bigger publishing houses, you don't usually have so much say unless you absolutely hate it. The smaller your company gets, the more input they'll allow. No one's really going to give you absolute control because the designer still has to have a sense of the market and what you can actually put in a cover. The company that I'm with now that is a little bit of a smaller company, so far I've just told them certain preferences. I've loved what they've done, so I got lucky with that stuff. Especially my latest series, I love the covers, and it was very different than what I'd originally envisioned, but that's the point because she's the graphic designer and I'm just the writer. So that's why you got to trust the people. I mean, it might not be what you expect, but it could be good too, or really good too. Yeah. The bigger the company, the less input you have. So that's kind of like a trade-off that you get. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure J.K. Rowling probably has a lot of say on her covers.
Oh, yeah. The bigger you get, you can, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to say, I wouldn't swear by it, but I have a suspicion.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. Well, so what would be something in the negative? Not that we want to talk negative. What would be something if I really don't like when books, authors, series, publishers, whatever do X?
In a similar vein, I don't like it when I see, this happens especially on mass markets. You're like, oh, I wonder what this book's about. And you pull it out and look on the back, and instead of a description, it's just a picture of the author's face. And it happens especially with the bigger authors. Like, oh, what's this Stephen King book about? And you pull it out, and it's just Stephen King's face and no description. And because they're mass markets, there's no flap jackets. You're like, oh, I guess I just have the title.
Yeah.
And that's it. So that actually kind of bugs me.
Yeah, I guess they're deciding that you're just buying the name and you don't even care what he's writing as long as it's Stephen King. I don't know.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And having just said a good cover will sell me. But, you know, if it's in the middle, I would like a description instead of just, you know. Stephen King's handsome enough, but, you know, I'd like a little more than just a face.
You know, my co-host once said that whenever she sees the face, she feels like she gets pulled out of the story. I don't know why. She's like, I can't dive into the story once I'm just looking at the author's face. That's probably her thing. We'll just chalk it up to like her thing, but it's so true. But it's a funny response, but it's so true. I'm like, just tell me what the book's about. I don't care.
Yep.
Oh man. Okay, very good. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is a blast. Enjoyed it.
This has been a bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast featuring Matt from There Will Be Books Podcast. To find out more about Matt, Peter, and their podcast, please visit the link in the episode notes. To keep track of Oh My Word Podcast and all the great stuff we're up to, please follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word Podcast. Visit www.eltenamount.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.